Each of you has 15 minutes for your principal arguments, and counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. So counsel for appellant, when you are ready, we will start the clock. You just need to state your name, go off mute, state the name and a party you represent for the record, and we're ready to go right now.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Rod Cheeta, and I represent Wade Hoffman, a petitioner in this matter. And we're basically looking at Minnesota Statutes 171.19 in this case. It's about a pretty thick paragraph, but a lot of our arguments revolve around the statute. So part of our argument is that the court has the duty in that statute to examine into the facts to determine whether a petitioner is entitled to a license. And in the statute, the court indicates that the court may consider live testimony at a hearing or by affidavit. So part of our argument here is that if a driver were to challenge that initial decision by the commissioner prior to the hearing, prior to a hearing ever being requested, then the court would certainly have to consider police reports, and the affidavit would probably be fine because the commissioner's agent can certainly attest to what they relied on at the time of their decision. What we are questioning is when there's new evidence considered on the issue of consumption, for example, we're arguing that this is where the case law really needs to be sort of pulled apart and scrutinized. Because we believe the commissioner is still relying on cases from before 1999, where police reports were, of course, considered admissible. But we're arguing that this is a different context now, and that things really haven't been clarified since 1999. So since Madison in 98, I believe, the issue was no longer singularly, you know, did the commissioner act arbitrarily, as it was, in fact, in the commissioner's sort of seminal case of Gardner. We now have a de novo type of proceeding on that issue. And so the court looks at, of course, new evidence brought forward at the hearing. And this was the
development. Counsel, may I ask you, Counsel, can you hear me? Can anyone hear me?
I can.
Okay. Oh, phew. I thought I had a problem. Okay. Why are you suggesting that the district court did not consider the evidence at the hearing, including the testimony that was presented? And if so, why do you think that?
I do believe that the court obviously heard the testimony, considered what petitioner had to offer, but we're arguing that the de novo standard really isn't simply met by conducting a hearing at which time you hear new evidence. That it's a standard that has to be applied to, that has no deference whatsoever to the commissioner's decision. And that's where we disagree with the trial court ruling, because at the end of the ruling, we see those conclusions of law that, you know, the commissioner didn't act unreasonably, and the sufficient cause language, which sort of takes into account, if we look at the administrative rule, an arbitrary and capricious type of standard. And so it's not merely hearing the new evidence, but also applying the correct standard that has no deference to what the commissioner did.
Mr. Cheeta, I'd like to follow up on Judge Smith's excellent question. As I look at the district court's order, it reiterated the contents of Officer F's reports and noted that given the totality of the circumstances, appellant appeared under the influence of alcohol. With the exception of appellant's testimony, no evidence indicated that his medications caused slurred speech or difficulty holding conversation. An appellant failed to explain his evasive actions. It seems to me, even under the standard you're asking us to apply, the district court did what it had to do. So why am I wrong?
Well, if we look, why I would say that the court is wrong is if we look at the findings of fact that the court made, I don't see the sort of independent determination that petitioner had consumed alcohol, which is what Madison required. In the four findings of fact that we have, number two refers to Officer Faust report that petitioner was under the influence. Number three refers to the Faust report, again, that says petitioner consumed alcohol. And the final finding of fact is that petitioner contends he was not consuming alcohol. And that's the extent of the findings of fact. So I didn't see that sort of independent determination that Madison talked about, that the trial court judge needs to say, I've determined that the petitioner has consumed alcohol.
I guess based on the language I just quoted to you, I would say the court did exactly what you're saying it had to do. So explain to me why the language I just recited doesn't do it precisely that. Given the totality of circumstances, which suggest it considered the police reports and your client's testimony, appellant appeared under the influence of alcohol. With the exception of appellant's testimony, no evidence indicated that his medications caused slurred speech or difficulty holding conversation. And three, appellant failed to explain his evasive actions. I mean, this sounds like a spot-on analysis of all the evidence presented, including the live testimony of your client, considering his arguments and rejecting them. And so I guess, you know, speaking for myself and not the panel, I don't understand why you're saying the court got it wrong under Madison.
Ultimately, in that same paragraph, again, the trial court is sort of deferring to the fact that the commissioner, it's almost as if the trial court is deciding that the commissioner made those determinations and decided that the commissioner did not act unreasonably.
What language are you referring to that would suggest that's what happened? Point me to, I've got the opinion in front of me. Point me exactly to what you're saying is wrong, or what you're suggesting the court didn't get right. I mean, what should I look at, or what should we all look at?
I think we should look at the four findings of fact, because if
and
you made an independent—
the conclusions of law and the memo.
Well, the conclusions of law to me is sort of the reasoning that allows the court to make those ultimate determination as to whether petitioner is entitled to a license. It isn't in and of itself.
So are you telling, I apologize for interrupting you, but I think this is the heart of the matter. Are you telling me, because the sentence I just quoted was in conclusions of law five and not in finding and not in a separate findings of fact four, that's why you win and the state loses? Is that the essence of the argument?
Well, there would be other reasons that we believe that the trial court was incorrect, but with
feel
regard-
free to share them with us.
Okay. So with regard to conclusion of law number five, I still read that as deferring to the report. But beyond that, Your Honor, what we've argued in this case is that there should be a different standard on new evidence at the hearing, because the statute, the legislature directed us that the court can consider live testimony or an affidavit. So we've argued in this case that in fact the police officer's report is not an affidavit. Initially it was contained within an affidavit, and so it would certainly support the commissioner's decision, because they're entitled to tell the trial court what they relied on at the time of their decision. But ultimately, if the police officer doesn't attest to that, then the police report, just someone else saying, here's the police report, that to us is not the type of thing that the legislator mandated the court to consider at the time of the hearing.
Look, I certainly agree with you. In looking at the statute, the legislature seems to have put its finger on the scale in terms of, well, the state gets to just can do it by the written record. If you want to do it by the written record, you got to bring your guy there for live testimony. So I assume because that way the state gets to cross-examine your guy. You know, you're right. If I was writing the law, I'd say, you know what? Probably not the way I would do it. You know, it seems to me, even Stevens, fair. One guy's got to bring his witness. We all should. But that's not what the law says. No one has challenged, at least in this appeal, the constitutionality of that. So, I mean, what I'm having a hard time understanding is, so you're saying what the court did wrong is okay, there's this live, there's written evidence, and then there's live evidence. And because there's live evidence, the state has to rebut your live evidence that he wasn't, that he wasn't on medication, or that, what I'm trying to understand is how do you want us to work this?
I'd like the court to say that this alleged affidavit that came in at the hearing is not something the court can consider, because when we're doing a live hearing.
I mean, that's not what the statute says.
I believe it
doesn't say that. It says just the opposite. And I agree with you. I think that's not right, but that's not what the statute says.
Well, I think the statute's very clear. The legislature wanted live testimony from both sides, clearly the commissioner, or an affidavit from the commissioner. Our argument is that this is not an affidavit. We cited Minnesota case law, albeit from 1892, that this is not an affidavit for a Department of Public Safety agent to say that this is the police report, and that the trial court cannot simply say, well, let's weigh petitioner's live testimony versus an unsworn piece of paper. That's not what the legislature intended. By stating affidavit, they wanted something out of personal knowledge.
So what you're telling me is, by affidavit, you would read that portion of the statute to say, it's not just an affidavit that attached to this document are true and correct copies of blah, 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 including the police report. What you would like is an affidavit of the cop stating everything he said in the police report under oath. Is that what you're saying? Or is that what you want?
So I don't know what I want, but I would ask that what would be admissible in court is an affidavit. So it doesn't have to, it could be simply an affidavit stating this is a true, not only accurate copy of my police report, but everything in here is true.
Counsel, can I ask, because this is very helpful, this question, I'm trying to pinpoint your objection to this so we can focus on it. Is it that you're saying that I mean, there are a couple things. I don't know whether you think there was adequate foundation to attach the police report. I don't know if you're saying, even irrespective of that, the police report is hearsay and is inadmissible and can't come in. I'm not exactly sure where your complaint is. And when I look at the Gardner decision, which is a published decision, in that case, a police report, I mean, it talks about that the evidence needs to be admissible, and including under that statute that permits the testimony to come in, 171.19, and decided that police reports fit a hearsay exception. It satisfied the statute, it comes in. So I'm trying to figure out where this case departs from what happened in Gardner to make this different.
Right. And so before Madison, and you know, the commissioner's argument that this goes back decades where police reports just come in, but then it cites to four cases in a 10-year period before Madison. So we can't rely on that anymore. Gardner was the old sort of arbitrary and capricious standard.
But I'm talking about Gardner's evidentiary ruling. Do you have an evidentiary problem with this police report, or do you just,
we do.
Or do you think there's like the standard of law was not correctly applied? I'm not pinpointed on what exactly is the objection to what happened.
So my objection is that since Madison requires a independent proceeding, a de novo proceeding, and that ultimately when you're bringing in the DPS agent's alleged affidavit, which was fine at the time of the commissioner's decision because they can tell us what they relied on. The problem with that is that this is not a true affidavit for purposes of a de novo hearing. The legislature said live testimony or an affidavit. This is not a true affidavit because the police report came in without anybody attesting to the fact that it was accurate.
And so an affidavit from the officer saying attached is my accurate police report would have sufficed and could be relied on substantively by the court. Is that right?
That's correct. At the de novo hearing, it could have, because that's what the legislature asked for. So it seems to me that the legislature, You know, if a police report could come in at a de novo hearing under 803.8, then what's, we would be looking at surplusage in the statute, mere surplusage that would be completely irrelevant, right? It wouldn't require an affidavit or live hearing. It would just require the commissioner to cite to 803.8, but that's not what the legislature demanded. The legislature demanded—
Sounds to me like you're saying it wouldn't be enough for the officer just to say, attaches my police report and it's accurate.
Well, as long as it was under oath and qualified as an affidavit, as how we know those documents. So I'm still—
Then it could come in, even under, and even though it's an out-of-court statement. If the officer just says, here it is, it's true and accurate, then it can come in.
That's what the legislature's told us.
Okay, okay. Yep. All right. Do you want to wrap up? I used up some of your time here at the end. You'll have time for rebuttal, too.
I will. I guess I can't quite see how much time.
You're done. I used up the last seconds of your time. So you can take a minute to wrap up and then you'll have rebuttal time.
I'll wait for the rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Great. Thank you, counsel. Counsel for respondent, again, state your name, party represent for the record, and we'll start the clock when you do that.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, William Young, Assistant Attorney General on behalf of the commissioner. I'll start with Judge Smith's question about the evidentiary standard. And the district court properly admitted the officer's police report through an affidavit pursuant to 803.8, which is exactly what the Gardner decision from this court said should happen, interpreting the statute. And as Judge Connolly sort of touched upon, if the statute seems to be unfair or should be changed, the branch of the government to do that is the legislature. And so
Mr. Young, longstanding precedent. Whose affidavit was it?
It was an affidavit from an employee at Driver and Vehicle Services, which is so the central office underneath the commissioner, one of the commissioner's delegates, you know, compiled the data that was sent by the officer, and it was her affidavit containing the police report, as well as appellant's driving record and the notices that were sent to appellant. All those exhibits were attached to one affidavit.
How would this person know that police report is the officer, that is Officer F's police report?
Well, she would be the custodian of record for the department to gather these sorts of reports, which is why under the 803.8, they're the reports that come in, maintained in the ordinary course of business, not only by the officer, he had the duty to respond to it, but then the custodian of record for the department then gets to put forward it as a normal report created by the department. Now touching upon Judge Connolly's questions about the district court order itself, the finding of, or the conclusion of law five, the final conclusion.
You know, I just want to back up just for 1 second, because I understand, I mean, there's two steps to this. A police officer writes a report in the context of being a police officer that's filed, you know, in the police officer system. Then it gets sent to the commissioner, right? And the commissioner says, here's what was sent to me. But I think the objection is, but just that it was sent to them, who knows? Like, is there someone attesting to the truth of what was said and what was sent to them? Isn't that a missing step? How can that person who says, yep, I'm looking in our file at what was sent to me, and this is what was sent to me. That's essentially what they say, right? This is what was sent to us by the police. Is that right?
Yeah, correct. This is what was sent, and it is the basis of our decision. And so I would point out that the statutory scheme in 117 or 171.17 is different from your ordinary administrative review. As this court's well aware, normally you're getting these cases from an administrative appeal on a certiorari appeal where the record is final. Here, the legislature has said the driver gets a chance to rebut that at the district court. And so that's an extra layer of protection for the driver to then produce evidence as to why the commissioner didn't have the full picture. In this case, the driver did exactly that, and the judge rejected that testimony. The judge said, because he was evasive and because most of his testimony confirmed what the officer said, that he was found outside of a bar at 2 a.m, that he dropped a cup of liquid on the ground, that he retreated to the bar, and that he eventually talked to the officer. All of that isn't sufficient for the judge to find that the officer's report was a good reason for the commissioner to believe that appellant had violated his absence restriction, and that appellant's testimony that it was caught, that whatever appearance of impairment he had was caused by medication was frankly not credible.
Mr. Young, would you at least agree with me that we wouldn't having these problems that Judge Smith and Mr. Cheetah are alluding to if, you know, the cop had to show up too, as opposed to, along with Mr. Cheetah's clients? because then presumably he's on the stand and he'd say what he saw. I mean, would that be, would that have eliminated all these problems?
Probably. I think you're right, Your Honor, that if the officer was there.
I think more than probably. But at the end of the line, that's not what the statute says, right?
Exactly. The legislature made the call. And again, this is an extra layer where, unlike most agency appeals, where the agency makes the decision and then the next step is to come to you, they got to go to the district court and put on their case and show why the decision was wrong. And the judge just rejected it. The judge said,
does the statute eliminate things like foundation and hearsay rule, et cetera? I mean, does it eliminate that? I mean, is any affidavit okay? Like, hey, the officer called me and told me the following, or overheard this. I mean, it seems like if we look at Gardner, rules of admissibility are still relevant, and that can be even a challenge to whether the affidavit does its job, can't it?
And that's exactly correct. I think the rules of evidence still apply to the 171.17 hearing, or 171.19, excuse me, to the hearing on this petition. But this affidavit was admissible pursuant to 8038 and the other exceptions to the, well, an affidavit can be admissible for many reasons, but the Gardner court expressly held this is the exact sort of evidence is admissible pursuant to the rules of evidence. It is not, it is admissible in spite of the hearsay rule or as an exclusion to the hearsay rule. But if it, but a different affidavit with someone from DVS just saying, hey, I saw the guy on my own and I don't know anything about him, but I wanted to cancel his license, that might not have any sort of reliability depending on what's in it. It might not be maintained in the ordinary course of business or whatever different reason. But under this one, this court's longstanding precedent has held it is admissible pursuant to the rules of evidence. I would touch upon Gardner.
I'd like to follow up on that. So you cited, and I'm obviously, I don't know the rules of evidence as well as all of you, but so I'm looking at rule 8038. So what am I looking for to get you where you want to be in answer to Judge Smith's question? What am I looking at?
Sure. Both 8038D and 8038C suggest that this affidavit was admissible in this particular case. Again, in answer to Judge Smith's questions, there are definitely other affidavits that might not be admissible for whatever reason. But in this case, unless sources of information indicate lack of trustworthiness, records, reports, statements, or data compilations of public offices setting forth matters observed pursuant to a duty imposed by law is excluded from the hearsay rule. That's exactly what the officer's report was. Then you go to 8038C, factual findings resulting from an investigation made pursuant to an authority granted by law are also not excluded. That's the section that was cited in the Gardner court, but it also puts to this affidavit. The affidavit shows these are the findings of the commissioner as to why it found appellant violated his abstinence restriction. So getting back to the Gardner and Madison cases, in both of those cases, unlike here, the district court didn't make credibility determinations. First, in Gardner, the earlier case, it didn't seem to understand that it was required to, whereas as Judge Connolly sort of pointed out in the final conclusion of law of this order, the district court expressly said, it didn't use the word credible, but everything else it said pretty much hinted it did not find appellant's position that his behavior was caused by medication rather than alcohol use to be credible. In the Madison court, it did make findings as to what all the testimony was, but then it didn't weigh any of that and it didn't explain why. It just sort of punted, and this court said, remanded it back, said, why did you find some testimony more credible than others? So in both cases, it said this court sent the case back to the district court for those credibility determinations and for those findings. In this case, that's not necessary because the district court summarized why it didn't find appellant's testimony to be credible as to why his behavior was not indicative of impairment, but was instead caused by medication. I don't have much else to say, Your Honors, unless there's questions. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Doesn't appear that there are any. Thank you, counsel. Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal, and you can begin now.
Thank you, Your Honors. So I would like to point out that we don't think, Gardner was overruled. In fact, Gardner is still good law going forward, but only with respect to affidavits that are placed into evidence to support the commissioner's initial determination, if in fact that's challenged by a particular citizen. But what wasn't contemplated in Gardner was a de novo trial. And so after Madison, we really have to ask ourselves, would an affidavit of the commissioner's agent attesting that it was a copy of the police report, would that satisfy what the legislature wanted based on what we see in 171.19? And the answer after 1999 has to be no, that Gardner is at least no longer good law in that setting. You know, it's interesting that, you know, both parties are sort of arguing, let's read the statute, it's plain language. But really what the commissioner is arguing for is an end run around the statute, because the legislature told us, okay, the commissioner, you don't have to show up. You've got two options. One is the live testimony. The other is the affidavit. And the commissioner says, no, we'll just bring it in through 8038. That is not following the statute. And that's an end run around the statute. And it's interesting.
Can I ask just one quick question? And that is, the statute says affidavit by agent or representative. So what, you know, does that, how does that impact your argument? I mean, can we take that to mean that the document clerk at the agency can sign the affidavit? I mean, kind of as was done here. This is a true and correct copy of what we've got from these different sources.
Well, I think generally we know that an affidavit is something that, as a fundamental matter, requires personal knowledge. And so we don't have any issue with that on the initial decision of the commissioner when that's challenged. They know what they relied on. They can tell us in an affidavit, but that's not an affidavit when it comes to a de novo hearing, based on the cases that we cited from Minnesota and Texas, that, you know, personal knowledge is a fundamental requirement of an affidavit. So, and this issue of 8038, and, well, the document has a tendency to be, looks truthful to me. Well, but that's not what the legislature said. They said they wanted it under oath. They wanted it live hearing where the judge is going to place you under oath, or they want an affidavit. This is not an affidavit, and it's not some conspiracy of the Commissioner of Public Safety. It's just the jumbling of the standards from before 1999 going forward after 1999. And we think that should be clarified. You know, maybe the case goes back and the judge says, well, I'll make an independent finding that he used alcohol. You know, I guess the case would be over at that point. But we just don't think that either that independent finding was made, or that there wasn't some deference to the commissioner. Now, clearly, we would still argue that, you know, the commissioner really didn't submit any actually admissible evidence. And so maybe that's another argument could be made. Would the trial court reopen the record? I guess I can't answer all of that here today. But we asked the court to find that the statute means what it says that it means, and that Gardner and these cases are still good law, but because they're so old, we do need clarification on the issue of whether, is that really still an affidavit as the legislature had said that they wanted? Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. Thank you both for your arguments today. The matter is submitted. We will have a decision out in a statutory timeframe. At this point, then, counsel can leave the call with our thanks. So can the marshal. And I don't know if the rest of us are going to hang on.